Today's reading is from Isaiah. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even youth will faint and be weary, and the young shall fall exhausted. But those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Well, I invite you to take out your outline for the message this morning. And as you do, I want to make one other brief announcement. I mentioned in an email I sent out this past Friday that my former colleague from Western North Carolina, who is now the United Methodist Bishop in Florida, has sponsored an effort to encourage people in the aftermath of what happened in Parkland, Florida, to write their legislators. And I made that website available, but we've also kind of done the same thing here. We've got sample letters that we used on that website that's available this morning, front and back, a couple of examples, along with information about our representatives and ways that you can write them. So if you wish to pick up a copy, you can do that. There's a table going toward the West Passage this morning. And again, as we talked about last week, this is something I want to just offer to us frequently, not only learning opportunities, but ways to be involved in issues to make our country safer. So this morning, I want to start with a question. You'll see at the top of your outline the word scale, and I want you to give yourself a rating. I want you to rate how busy and tired you are today. 1 to 10. Let's make 1 the low end of the scale, meaning that you're not tired at all. You are so full of energy right now, you are just about ready to burst. You don't know how you could function if you felt more alive than you do in the present moment. 10, meaning you're not quite sure how you even got out of bed this morning and made it to church. You have no energy. You are exhausted. 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself? This past week, Matt Baez went downtown and just interviewed people on the street about how tired and busy they feel. Take a look at this.
Hey, St. Luke's, we are talking about Sabbath this weekend. We're talking about pace of life, stress, and how to find rest in our lives. What, on a scale of 1 to busy, how busy would you say your life is?
I say busy.
Very busy?
Mm-hmm.
Busy. 10, a million, whatever.
It's busier than busy.
You have no idea.
1 to 10, 10 being stressed, mine stays at a 20.
What do you do to take the edge off of your stress in life?
You know, a lot of times I will read, I put in my good music, like what I'm listening to now, Barry White.
Relax, listen to music, and have a cocktail.
I really just don't worry about what I can control. It took me a long time to learn that, but if I can't control it, I don't worry about it.
We're from St. Luke's.
Oh, right. Okay. So what are you giving up for Lent?
Because you don't really reflect this persona of stress.
I try not to.
How do you do that?
Just step back from it all and just try to find something that I like to do. So like go for a walk, go for a hike.
Yeah, I guess try to rely on certain hobbies. I fish, I golf.
Talk things out when things are stressful.
We're interviewing people for our church. Would you have a second?
People are stressed. They don't have time for an interview.
People need some Sabbath up in this place.
So you've heard it said, accept the things you cannot change. Run for the mall. The massage chair, baby. It's working for me. Oh. Would you have a second for an interview?
my cat is kind of my go-to stress-free zone. He thinks he's a dog sometimes, but it's fine.
So it's a dog cat. It all works.
I'll say don't sweat small stuff. It's all small stuff.
The Optimist Club. This will lower your stress.
Absolutely, yes. Being surrounded by positive people.
I think for me, faith is probably something that's super important to help me keep grounded. Plus, I have 3 golden retrievers, and they are huge stress relievers.
I realized that, like, I play games on my phone all the time, and that was using up a lot of my time that I could have been doing other things. Meditate on the scriptures for myself is a huge part of the time that I spend.
So there you have it, St. Luke's. At some point, it seems that stress is coming for us all. The important thing to remember is how to pace ourselves.
So I imagine every generation would say that generation was the busiest and most stressed of any in history. And probably true. I imagine each subsequent generation gets busier and busier. But the issue of being tired and dealing with stress has always been present in every generation. You can go all the way back to the 6th century BC and hear the prophet Isaiah addressing the issue of people who are not only tired, they're weary. And there's a difference. The words we heard in the scripture lesson this morning come at the end of chapter 40, perhaps some of the better known verses from Isaiah. The promise and the picture of rest and renewal of strength, what life looks like when we're at the 1-0 tiredness and stress. But right before that reading is a verse that describes the condition of the people. Verse 27, you'll see this in your outline. O Jacob, how can you say the Lord does not see your troubles? O Israel, how can you say God ignores your rights? The people aren't just tired, they're weary. Because tiredness can lead to weariness. You can get tired, you can get worn down, but it begins to affect your spirit and your faith when maybe you start to say, I can't even see how God is present in this situation in my life. I'm wondering if this whole faith business is just a hoax. Have you ever been weary? Have you ever gotten exhausted, but it begins to affect your spirit? You begin to question God. You don't see how God is moving and active. And into that condition, Isaiah brings a vision of a new, different understanding of God, a God who never grows weak or weary, a God willing to lend power and help to people. But the way that that power and help gets experienced is through a different kind of pace of life. So the promise Isaiah gives is that we will renew our strength so that we mount up with wings like eagles, we soar, so that we run and not grow weary, we walk and not faint. Now think for a moment, is that just a little counterintuitive? Look at the progression. We fly, we soar, then we run, and eventually we walk. Wouldn't you think that goes the other way around? You start out walking, and then you build yourself up to a pace where you can run, and then when you're at full speed, it feels like you're soaring. But for Isaiah, soaring is not the aim in life. The aim is to walk. Isaiah was telling people, if you want to experience God's strength, you have to slow down. You have to slow down. So in the infamous mountain climbing experience I shared with you last week, on that same trip, I did another one-day excursion, and it involved having to walk quite a distance across a glacier to get to the part where we started ascending. And probably because I was eager to get started climbing, I wasn't really conscious about my gait as I was walking, and I kept getting ahead a little bit of my guide, which with an Austrian guide is not a smart thing to do. He finally said to me, slow down. This is not a race. The point is to enjoy the journey. Now that's been helpful advice many times along my life, maybe it would be helpful to you today. Is the pace of your life right now allowing you to enjoy your journey? Is the pace of your life right now, the way that you're running your race, is it allowing you to enjoy the journey of life? You know, we don't always have a choice about racing. Sometimes we just have to race. You have to get up in the morning and go to work. You've got people who depend on you. You've got to care for others. You don't always have a choice about that, but we always have a choice about the pace in which we run. In his book, Great by Choice, Jim Collins references the great race to be the first to reach the South Pole. It took place in 1911. The race was between two explorers, the Norwegian Roald Amundsen, you see on the right, and the British explorer Robert Scott on the left. They both were similar in age. They started within days of each other. They faced the exact same conditions, but the Norwegian team reached the South Pole 34 days quicker, and they made it home safe and sound. Robert Scott and his team never made it home. Within a few miles of a supply depot, they died from cold exposure, exhausted and hungry. Now, why did that happen? In the book, Collins explains a number of different reasons because of the way they approached the challenge, but he attributed this as the number one factor. The Norwegian team had a 20-mile-a-day approach that they kept rigorously. They would walk 20 miles and stop. Some days they were lucky to get 20 miles in because of the conditions. Other days, they reached 20 miles early in the afternoon. They could have kept going another 10 or 15, but they stopped. They rested 20 miles, stop, rest 20 miles. They did that and they made it. In other words, it was about the pace in which they ran that race that allowed them to survive. God has worked a spiritual pace into life itself that we all need. We all depend on this pace. As I've talked about in the series, God made us all with something inside of us that yearns for God, and God also made us with a dependency upon God. That dependency and that pace is called Sabbathing. Sabbathing. Now, it may sound funny to use the word Sabbath as a verb, but Sabbath is a verb. It literally means to cease, to cease. When you practice the Sabbath, it doesn't just mean you come to church. It means you're ceasing some things in life. You're ceasing from work and other activity. And this Sabbathing pattern is not just a weekly routine, it's actually a daily routine. Go back to Genesis 1 and the story of creation. Each day, God creates a new part of the world. And at the end of the day, it says there was evening and there was morning, a day. Now, once again, doesn't that sound a little counterintuitive? Doesn't the day begin with morning and end with evening? But the Bible says evening and then morning. In other words, the day starts when we go to bed. That's when the day begins. When we are resting, when we're not doing anything, when we're not being productive. Because we remember we worship a God who never slumbers nor sleeps. Our day begins with the reassurance that when we aren't accomplishing anything, God is fast at work. And then we bring that pattern into our weekly routine. Author Marva Dawn shares a study by a University of Arizona researcher who's found that our human bodies actually run on a 25-hour-a-day cycle, that if we're living well, we need 25 hours. There's a little problem there, isn't there? We live in a 24-hour-a-day world, which means God made our bodies such that every week we need a day to catch up with ourselves. We need a day to cease from other activity that fills the other 6 days so that we can rest and get replenished. Sabbath at its best looks like 52 Christmases a year. When you get ready for Christmas, do you actually go through some preparation rituals? Do you do some cooking in advance so that on Christmas Day you don't have to be busy in the kitchen so that you can celebrate the day, right? So that you can be with family. Ideally, Sabbath is meant to be observed the same way. We cook, we get ready in advance of Sabbath. So when Sabbath comes, it's a day that we look forward to all week. We're not going to spend it doing laundry and cleaning the house and catching up on chores. We're going to break away from everything else. We're going to enjoy our family. We're going to celebrate it with no work, without having to produce something to get all of that out of the way. God created us actually physiologically with that need. And if we don't follow it, well, we're like rubber bands. We all can be stretched. We all can be stretched, but if you just keep stretching, it snaps and it doesn't feel too good. If we never rest, if we never break, what happens? We get to a place where we snap. We hurt ourselves. And just like rubber bands can fly off, they can hurt people who are close by. What does life look like when you snap? When you push and push and push and push and you finally snap, what does that look like? You ever hurt yourself? Do you ever hurt people around you? If you're in a small group during this season of Lent, I hope you'll make as a point of conversation how you practice Sabbath and how other people do. You might even think about things that you've not considered before, about ways that you can practice the Sabbath better on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, maybe even quarterly and annually. What are ways that you can intentionally get everything else out of the way so that you can focus on God's presence in your life, on God's activity, when you can get replenished with relationships, when you can just cease from other things? But what I want to spend the next few moments on is thinking about the benefit of doing routines like that. What happens to us when we have good, regular pacing patterns of Sabbath in our life? One benefit is this: we learn to let God be God. When we practice the Sabbath, we allow God to be God. Because when we don't, what we're saying is, everything about my life depends on me. I've got to carry the weight of the world on my shoulders. I have to produce these things and get this work done and solve these problems. If I don't do it, who is? And we start to take God's place. And we forget that we're limited, finite creatures, and we have to be replenished. Martin Luther learned this. We did a series on Luther last fall. You might remember we talked about his experience at Wartburg Castle. He had just had his life threatened when he made his defiant stand to the Holy Roman Emperor. And to protect him, he was sent to Wartburg Castle to live for 10 months. And those were agonizing months because he couldn't do anything. He couldn't continue the fight and the effort and speak and encourage others. But when the 10 months ended, he discovered that the Reformation movement had been advanced when he was in hiding at Wartburg Castle. He found that God was keeping things going when he wasn't doing anything. It changed his life. It helped him bring that understanding into everything he did for the rest of his life, that what he did was not the most important thing. It's letting God be God. That became a motto of his life: let God be God. He even said this one time. He said, "When I sit in Wittenberg and drink my little glass of beer, the gospel is running its course." So if you ever see me at Big Lug, I'm not just hanging out, I'm doing Reformation work while I'm there. The gospel runs its course. When we practice the Sabbath, we remind ourselves, you know what? God is at work. God is solving things I have yet to discover. I need to be replenished. This isn't a luxury for me to take time and just refuel. It's a necessity. God made me this way. Another benefit is we learn to rely on that God. We discover that we can rely on God's help. A minister friend of mine talks about preaching the Isaiah passage one time, and he preached that counterintuitive notion that first in the Christian life we learn to walk, then we learn to run, then we learn to fly. After the sermon, an elderly woman came up to him and she said, "Listen, first I want to thank you for your message, but as you were speaking, I kept thinking the whole time that my Christian life looks more like what Isaiah described. When I first became a Christian, I was more alive than I'd ever been in my life. I was soaring like an eagle, and I was probably obnoxious because of it. I got judgmental. I knew what other people ought to be doing and how they ought to live, but by God's grace, I learned how to run, and I learned to come down to earth a little bit. And I learned to serve and to work hard. But even then, my work often became about me, about the way I thought things should be done. And eventually, by God's grace, I learned that the aim is just to walk at a steady pace, that the Christian life is about a walk with Christ and receiving His presence and His help." Dave Williamson and I were talking about this message this week, and we were reflecting on some of the things that have happened at the high school in Parkland, Florida since the shooting and the students who are speaking out, and how encouraging that is. You know, regardless of what you think about what they're saying, it's heartening, isn't it, to see teenagers saying, "We want to change things in our world." That's encouraging. But then Dave said, you know, the one thing I'd be concerned about for these kids is what's going to happen when they run up against opposition. What's going to happen when they discover that even though they have all the right desire in the world, there are some things they can't change by their own power and their strength? And I think that's why I talk about how concerned I get with young people who are not engaged in their faith. I get concerned about the lack of presence of more children and families in their faith, not because they're going to learn better things here than they're going to learn in the rest of life. I don't really think that's it. Kids who aren't even going to church can stand up for the right things. It's more about understanding the help we need to do the right things. That kids who are devoid of this understanding that the God we worship is about these right things, and He wants to lend His help and His power to the people who pursue them. So we don't think it's up to us, and when we get met with resistance, we want to throw our hands in the air and just quit and say, "Who cares anyway?" We need a help beyond ourselves. 4 days before he died, John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist Church, wrote a letter to a young person, a young man named William Wilberforce, a new member of Parliament, who was standing against slavery, trying to abolish it. That was an uphill battle. The slave trade in 18th century England was a prosperous enterprise, and most of the members of Parliament prospered from slavery. And people told William Wilberforce, "You better be quiet before you get yourself in trouble. You are fighting an uphill battle. Let me just tell you now, it is not going to change no matter what you do." John Wesley became concerned for William Wilberforce, who had become a Methodist. He wanted him to understand that what he was doing was not just a good idea, that was the will of God. But because it's the will of God, he's going to need God's help. So 4 days before he passed away, he wrote these words: "Unless the divine power has raised you up to be as Athanasius against the world, I see not how you can go through your glorious enterprise in opposing that execrable villainy, which is the scandal of religion, of England, and of all human nature. Unless God has raised you up for this very thing, you'll be worn out by the opposition of men and devils. But if God be for you, who can be against you? Are all of them together stronger than God? Oh, be not weary in well-doing. Go on in the name of God and in the power of his might, till even American slavery, the vilest that ever saw the sun, shall vanish away before it. Reading this morning a tract wrote by a poor African, I was particularly struck by that circumstance that a man who has black skin being wronged or outraged by a white man can have no redress. It being a law in our colonies that the oath of a black against a white goes for nothing. What villainy is this? That he who has guided you from youth up may continue to strengthen you in this and all things is the prayer of your affectionate servant, John Wesley. Simply reminding him, we all need God's help, and by God's help we'll succeed. When I did some mountain climbing excursions, Susan became concerned for me, I think because the fact that I didn't know what I was doing, but she didn't have the nerve to say that. Instead, she gave me as a birthday present a week at a mountain climbing school. So part of that school involved some rock climbing techniques. So the guide was showing me how to rappel down a cliff, and he took my carabiner along with some other carabiners and showed how when you weave the rope through it just right, this becomes like a break. So we roped ourselves up over the side of a cliff that was a sheer drop of several hundred feet. He had the rope against his carabiners and he showed, now when you go down, you pull up and it'll break and slow your descent and you can stop yourself. And then he showed me. He said, you don't ease your way down. You kick away from the wall of the cliff and you drop. And so he did it. And he braked himself and he was suspended midair. He looked up and said, now your turn. It's the most unnatural thing I've ever done. I braced my body, leaning all the weight away from the cliff with nothing but the rope to support me, and just kind of closed my eyes and kicked and felt myself free fall. And then gently lift up on the rope, slowing my descent, and I stopped right next to him. We were just swaying side by side in the wind, looking up at this rope that went over the top of the canyon wall, held by nothing more than a few carabiners. Think about that image and listen to the Phillips translation of 1 Peter 5:7. You can throw the whole weight of your anxieties upon him, for you are his personal concern. You are his personal concern. Is anything weighing you down today? Are you weary from anything? Are you facing big decisions you don't know the answer to? Are you exhausted? Are you tired? Are you uncertain about the future? Throw the whole weight of your anxieties upon him, for he cares for you. We can come here week after week, Sunday after Sunday. All kinds of things can challenge us. We can be directed to go and serve in some capacity, to care for other people, maybe to be lifted up and inspired. But this, above all things, I hope happens every week when we come here, that we remember there is a God we depend on. And we are his personal concern. And we can walk out the door confident of this, that he's got a hold of us. We are suspended by his help. And we can face the week ahead knowing we're not alone. He's watching out for us. Continue that habit, and the journey will be a joy.